At risk of being considered perverse, I believe I will read the conclusions before I read the remainder of the paper. First, a few words of introduction. The title is Days of Genesis 1, Literal or Non-Literal Days. A long-standing issue in the history of biblical exposition has been the question, are the days of Genesis 1 to be understood as literal days? Few issues, seemingly, have stimulated the minds of human beings more than this question has stimulated it. Every bush has been beaten, every rock has been overturned, seemingly, in the quest for a rationale for belief in non-literal days. My purpose herein is to discuss the meaning of Yom. The transliteration of the Hebrew word is spelled Y-O-M, the Hebrew word for day, in Genesis 1 with a view to answering this question. I do so in terms of 1, the meanings of Yom, 2, reasons for beliefs in literal and non-literal days, 3, the day-age theory, and 4, a couple of other views. The issue is not the date of creation or the age of the earth. Belief in creation in 6 literal days is compatible with the belief in either recent or remote creation. I prefer to believe that the events of Genesis 1 took place perhaps a few thousand years ago. I don't think I would want to pin it down to 6,000 or 7,000. The phrases literal days and non-literal days herein refer respectively to 24-hour days and to other periods of time. Literalist and non-literalist are used in similar ways. I here defend the literalist view. So we'll go now to the conclusions. The conclusions consist, first of all, of 3 quotations, one from Terence Fretheim, and he says, "It is my opinion that those who defend the literal meaning of the word day have the preponderance of the evidence on their side." Second quotation is from the late Gerhard Hassel, whom most of you people know. "The cumulative evidence converges on every level, leading to the singular conclusion that the designation Yom, day, in Genesis 1, means consistently a literal 24-hour day. The author of Genesis 1 could not have produced more comprehensive and all-inclusive ways to express the idea of a literal day than the ones that were chosen." Third quotation from James Stambaugh. "The only reasonable choice which remains is that Moses meant to communicate that God created in a series of 6 consecutive 24-hour days. God, through the pen of Moses, is being redundant for redundancy's sake. God is going out of his way to tell us that the days of creation were literal solar days." Stambaugh concluded by saying that, he has this in boldface type, "the only meaning which is possible is that the days of creation were 24-hour days." And then my own conclusion. "I am convinced, 1, that all attempts to get non-literal days out of the days of Genesis 1 have failed, and all future attempts will fail. 2, that interpreting these days as non-literal has involved questionable exegetical procedures, including major misinterpretations of Hebrew words." The last 5 words are a quotation. "And 3, that interpreting these days as long days in order to harmonize Genesis 1 and science, A, involves an unacceptable degree of extrapolation," come to that later, "B, represents, as does also the idea of theistic evolution, a compromised view of the transcendence of God, and too much of a concession to the naturalistic, non-theistic bias of science, and C, is unworkable. It has not yielded and cannot be made to yield anything remotely approaching the eons said to be required for evolution." I should say said to be required for evolution. "I recommend, therefore, that the idea of interpreting these days as non-literal days be abandoned, and that some other means be discovered for harmonizing with the creation account the facts and inferences of science." I'll proceed now to discuss about 10 reasons which I have found for believing that the days were literal days. Before that, just a brief discussion of the meanings of the Hebrew word Yom. The meaning of Yom in the Old Testament includes literal day, the sunlit portion of a day, epoch, various defined and undefined periods of time. According to Davis, when Yom designates something other than a 24-hour day, it refers to a, quote, specified duration, unquote. According to Stambaugh, while Yom can be used for long periods of time, its meaning in any passage must be determined by its context, not only by its semantic range. He said also that Yom in the plural can be used of periods of time such as a few thousand years. The meaning of Yom in many cases is modified, for example, by a prefixed preposition, just as we do with some words in English. Thus, the Yom in the day has an adverbial meaning and can be translated when, as in Genesis 2:4, when God created. Can also be translated if. The period of time indicated by Yom is not necessarily a literal day. Arguments for the literal day view. My procedure here is to list reasons, including the views of authorities, for the belief that the writer of Genesis 1, presumably Moses, represented creation as taking place in six literal days. 1. The hermeneutical principle involved. The first argument is the widely accepted hermeneutical principle that any passage of the Bible should be interpreted literally unless there is a good reason to interpret it figuratively. That is, it should be taken literally if it makes sense and figuratively if the literal makes no sense. There appears to be no reason in Genesis 1 for figurative interpretation. 2. Other available expressions. That the author of Genesis 1 repeatedly used day instead of another word for time indicates his belief that the days were literal days. If he intended long periods of time, he could have used some other word or phrase. 3, time required for divine action. This with me is non-negotiable. The question, how long a time is required by God to perform any act or activity, is relevant. I suggest that in any action, he takes no more time than his purpose in that action necessitates. That he can create by fiat and ex nihilo suggests that he can create instantaneously. The idea that the work of creation requires eons represents for me and some others, therefore, a compromised view of the transcendence of God. As Alice noted, limitless time is a poor substitute for that omnipotence which can dispense with time. August Dillman agreed, saying of divine causality that short periods of time are sufficient and, quote, are alone suitable. He said also that the author of Genesis 1, quote, embraced the process of creation in a framework of 7 days in order to provide a rationale for the Sabbath, and otherwise would have allowed less time, but not more, for creation. God could have created the whole world instantaneously. And I think I'll be suggesting why he did not do so when I come to one of these other items. 4, the wording of the text. The wording of Genesis 1 suggests that each creative fiat was followed immediately by its implementation. According to Umberto Cossuto, in Genesis 1:3, the statement of the divine fiat and its implementation were given the tersest form to show that the fiat, or fiat, was implemented, quote, as soon as he, God, commanded, unquote. For the clause, and it was so, verse 11, he commented, it was so instantly. 5, days defined as evening and morning. Baker and Hassel agree that the phrase evening and morning cannot be made to mean anything other than a literal day. Stambaugh concurred, saying that day, when used with evening and morning in the Old Testament, always means a literal day. Lack of qualifiers of Yom. 6. When Yom refers to a period of time longer than a day, Hassel says, it is qualified by a preposition, compound construction, or in some other way. And this is a quotation. In other words, extended non-literal meanings of this Hebrew term have special linguistic and contextual connections which indicate clearly that a non-literal meaning is intended. When such qualifiers are absent, as in Genesis 1, Yom refers to a 24-hour day. Number 7, the relation of creation week to the Sabbath. The wording of the fourth commandment of the Decalogue makes sense only if the days of Genesis 1 were literal days. It seems clear from Genesis 1, 1 to 2, 3, and Exodus 28 to 11, that the work of creation was distributed over 6 days in order to provide for the week and the Sabbath. As Gunkel said, Herman Gunkel, I believe, the institution of the seventh day as the Sabbath would be, quote, superfluous, unquote, if one did not understand the days as literal days. Number 8, the use of Yom with a numeral. According to Hassel, Yom, when modified by a numeral, refers to a literal day. He found this practice pervasive and with few exceptions. The exceptions can hardly be used to change the meaning of Yom in Genesis 1. Number 9, Yom in a numbered series. Friedheim maintained that when day is used in a numbered series, as in Genesis 1 and Numbers 29, it always refers to a literal day. Number 10, we'll take a look now at some authorities, lexicographers, expositors, and scholars who otherwise classified. According to Hassel, quote, numerous scholars and commentators, unquote, I think I won't keep saying quote and unquote, who have carefully translated the use of day in the Old Testament have concluded that the creation days cannot be anything but literal 24-hour days. None of the lexicographers, he said, had departed from the literal understanding of day. Let's take a look at them now. Kurler and Baumgartner, abbreviation H-A-L-O-T, that's the Hebrew Aramaic lexicon of the Old Testament, and the Dictionary of Classical Hebrew, DCH, the Theological Lexicon of the Old Testament, TLOT, explicitly identify Yom in Genesis 1:5, and DCH and TLOT also in the 5 associated passages in Genesis 1 as a day of 24 hours. The New International Dictionary of Old Testament Theology and Exegesis, NIDOTTE, says that when Yom is used in Genesis 1:5 of the complete, says that Yom is used in Genesis 1:5 of the complete cycle that includes both daytime and nighttime. Theological Word Book of the Old Testament, TWOT, however, says that the days are of indeterminable length. Many professors of Hebrew and Old Testament have confirmed the literalist position. Professors at 9 universities, including Oxford and Harvard, were asked how Yom with a numeral in Genesis 1 should be translated. All who replied affirmed that it should be translated as a day as commonly understood. James Barr, referred to as a renowned Old Testament scholar, was quoted as saying in a letter that, as far as he knew, quote, there's no professor of Hebrew or Old Testament at any world-class university who does not believe that the writers of Genesis 1 to 11 intended to convey to their readers that, among other things, creation took place in 6 days of 24 hours. In what may be the strongest statement of the literalist position, Ginsberg, the great Hebraist, said that the definition of day in Genesis 1:5 imperatively demands that Yom should be understood as a natural day. Among expositors, Funrad, that's Gerhard, supported by Wenham, Kiel and DeLitch, and Gunkel, to name only a few, says that the days should be understood as actual days. Next, I intend to take apart the arguments for non-literal days. First argument, literary genre. Hassel discussed attempts to perceive Genesis 1 in terms of a literary genre, which would permit a non-literal interpretation, and said, the use of the literary genre approach is meant to restrict the meaning of Genesis 1 to a thought form which does not demand a factual historical reading of what took place. After reviewing a number of genres proposed for Genesis, he said, the obvious consensus is that there is no consensus on the literary genre of Genesis 1. This makes the literary genre approach for a non-literary reading of Genesis 1 suspect of special pleading. We go on. But when Genesis 1 is compared to the hymns, parables, poems, cultic liturgies of the Bible, Husserl said, it proves to be none of these, nor is it a metaphor or story. It is a historical prose record written in rhythmic style, recording factually and accurately what took place in the creation of the heavens and the earth, and depicting the time when it took place. Point number two, some non-literalists appeal to 2 Peter 3:8, Psalms 94. The first of these, 2 Peter 3:8, states that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years and 1,000 years in one day. The passage in Psalms is similar. A critique of this appeal involves two points. One, that neither passage has a creation context. Two, that each passage has a comparative particle. The relationship between day or evening, depending on the passage, and 1,000 years is one, not of identity, but of analogy. A day is said to be like, not to be equal to, 1,000 years. This is a quotation. The application of the days of creation to 1,000-year periods, Gunkel called a capricious corruption. Husserl said that, quote, from contextual and grammatical syntactical points of view, unquote, the application of Genesis 94 to Genesis 1 does not work. Another quotation, appropriate linguistic and phraseological criteria of comparison are lacking. Number three, the account of the fourth day. To argue that days 1 to 3 were not literal days because the sun was not created until day 4 misses two points. A, the text explicitly states for each of these days that it was evening and morning. B, the length of the day can be determined with reference to a visible star. Another argument is that, since the light of the stars takes years to reach the earth, the days of Genesis 1 could not have been ordinary days. This objection might be would be valid only if the cosmos, or at least the local galaxy, was created when Earth was, or shortly before. Genesis 1 does not state unambiguously that the stars were created on day 4. And even if they had been, most of those visible from the earth with unaided vision would have been visible by the time of Abraham, the earliest that stars are referred to in the scripture as visible. Number four, the account of the sixth day. This argument states that the days could not have been literal days, for the events of day 6 could not have been squeezed into one literal day. Non-literalists have discovered several ways of, quote, lengthening, unquote, day 6 to beyond the limits of 24 hours. One, by expanding the activity of Adam even before he named the animals beyond what the text states. The text states of Adam only that he named the animals and that he greeted Eve. Now, where was I? Two, by envisioning an unrealistically large number of animals for Adam to name. Three, by imagining either that the naming of the animals was a deliberate, careful process which necessarily took time, or that Adam had to meticulously analyze each animal before naming it. The naming of the animals almost certainly was the only activity recorded for day 6 that required much time, and it is far from obvious from the text that this work required a long time. According to 2:19:20, Adam named only certain kinds of animals, certainly birds, and probably and large terrestrial animals only. And I'll add probably to that last phrase. There were almost certainly far fewer kinds of these originally created than the thousands of species that now exist. Biologist Frank Marsh believed that the animals named by Adam were basic groups, not the wide variety of present-day species. Given one fact and the validity of four assumptions, we can estimate the time required for the naming, less than 2.5 hours. I maintain, therefore, that the events of day 6 could have been easily squeezed into one day. Five, alleged indeterminate length of the seventh day. Some argue that the seventh day of creation week, was not a long period of, was not a literal day, but a long period of time. That is God's, quote, long and as yet unending Sabbath of cessation from creative work, unquote. The support for this argument is an understanding of Hebrews 4, 3, and 5, and the fact that, according to the seventh day, the fact that the account of the seventh day lacks the words, the evening and the morning were the seventh day. Since the seventh day was not a literal day, but a long period of time, so the argument goes, the other days were also long periods, unless, as McComb suggests, God intended to resume the work of creation week by week after the seventh day. His cessation from creative work would have continued beyond that day. McCone is right, but that does not necessarily mean that the seventh day is to be understood as a long period of time. He, of course, does not know whether God resumed the work of creation after the seventh day. It might be said that it is a fact of God's desistance from creative work on the seventh day, not the length of the period of that desistance, that is important. If God concluded his work of creating the universe at the end of creation week, of course his rest from creative work would continue, regardless of whether or not the days of Genesis 1 were literal days. Even if planet Earth was the last created, as may be inferred from chapter 2, verse 1, and the seventh day was the beginning of a long period of desistance from creative work, it would not necessarily follow that the seventh day was intended to be understood as coterminous with the period of desistance. I believe with Young that there is no scriptural warrant, certainly not in Hebrews 4, 3 to 5, for the idea either that the seventh day is eternal or that it still continues. There are three objections to the idea that the seventh day of Genesis 2 was of indeterminate length. A, arguably, the length of the seventh day was determined by the length of each of the other days. Surely the phrase, the evening and morning, is a more convincing reason for believing that the days, including the seventh, were literal days than the absence of the same phrase with respect to the seventh day is for the view that the seventh day, and therefore the other days, were not literal days. As Friedheim noted, although evening and morning are not mentioned, Genesis 2, 1-3 surely seems to be referring to a literal day. As a quotation in Genesis 2, 3, God blesses and hallows that day, clearly indicating that it is a specified day that is set aside as a special holy day. B, if the seventh day was a long period of time, it would lose its character as a type of the human Sabbath. As Clark states, one of the principal motives of the creation story is to trace the origin of the Sabbath. As the seventh day is the Sabbath, the other days must be intended as real days, not as period of times. See, the Creator's cessation from creative work has not really been continuous since creation. In the giving of the manna, as in creation, he engaged in creative work on each of 6 days and abstained from it on the seventh day. According to Dillman, the seventh day surely cannot possibly be thought of as a day stretching on in infinitum. He explained the omission of the clause, the evening and the morning were the seventh day. Quote, the narrative is at an end. There is no transition made to a further day. Number six, argument from Genesis 2:4. Fisher advanced the view that the use of the word toledot, now that's the word that Dr. Davidson referred to several times last evening. The word toledot translated generations in several passages in the King James Version, and the word bayom and the day that in Genesis 2:4 means a long time span for creation week. With reference to toledot, Fisher, apparently following U. Ross, said that since the singular form always refers to a long period of time and the word is plural, quote, we know with certainty that generations must refer to multiple periods of time, each of which are sick, longer than a calendar week, end of the quotation. He concludes, if we take Genesis 2:4 literally, the entire creation event from day 1 through day 6 is defined by the author of Genesis as a sequence of long periods of time. With reference to Biyom in 2:4, Fisher says that, since it obviously includes the preceding 6 days, it cannot be interpreted as a literal day, for surely one literal day cannot be considered to be made up of several literal days. Therefore, the yom is used figuratively as a time of indefinite length, and as such equals six shorter periods of indefinite length. In reply to Fisher, it should be pointed out that, as TWOT suggests, generations is not the best translation of Toledot. I think Dr. Davidson made that point last evening. Dictionaries list these meanings for Toledot in general. Generations, account of a man and his descendants, line of descendants, origin, begettings. In Genesis 2:4, Toledot is translated as follows. The Septuagint has Biblos Geneseos. That means book or account of origin. B. Davies and Mitchell in their lexicon, a story of origins as of the heavens and the earth. C. NASB and NIV have account. For verse 4a, first part of verse 4, HALOT gives and defends. Quote the usual rendering, unquote. This, and then quote again, this is the history of the origin of heavens and earth, etc. Here, as in all of the other occurrences of Toledot, the time referent is to be determined by the context. Obviously, we cannot get eight eons out of generations in Genesis 2:4. Now to Biyom. In any of its occurrences, Biyom refers not necessarily to a literal day, but to a period of time, the length of which is determined, if at all, from its context. Fisher overlooked the fact that any period of time of unspecified length longer than a day consists of one or more literal days. The yom consists here of six literal days, or, as some maintain, day six only. Both Biyom and Toledot are neutral, per se, as far as the literalist and non-literalist positions are concerned. If, for example, the days of chapter 1 are literal days, Biyom and Toledot refer to a time period of literal days. It may not be argued that in 2:4 either refers to a long period of time. It appears, therefore, that arguments for non-literal days based on the use of these words are not valid. 7, an interpretation of Genesis 2, 5, and 6. This argument is based on the idea of a contradiction between Genesis 1, 11, and 12, which mentions creation of plant life, and 2, 5, that arises when the 6 days are understood as literal days. According to Bloker, in 2, 5, Scripture supplies the proof that this week is the Genesis, this week of the Genesis prologue is not literal. This proof has not been refuted. He didn't live long enough. This argument involves equating the vegetation created on day 3 with specific kinds of vegetation, shrub of the field and plant of the field, referred to in 2:5 as not yet existing. The idea is that there was vegetation at the end of day 3, but none on day 6. That 2:5, quote, describes a time when the earth was without vegetation, unquote, because there was no rain, presupposes, quote, a sufficient length of time, unquote. Obviously, longer than 3 days for the absence of rain to be able to constitute the cause of the absence of plants. We have plant life on day 3, none on day six. Obviously, there was a long drought to kill off the plant life. This is basically what the argument involves. The refutation of this position involves a different interpretation of Genesis 2, 5, and 6, an interpretation presented by Umberto Casuto and Randall Yonker, whom some of you people know, and with an addition by the writer. Thus, this reinterpretation as follows. Verses 5 and 6 describe conditions that begin with day 3 of creation week and extend until at least, at the earliest, the curse and judgment of chapter 3, the shrub of the field, the plant of the field, tilling the soil, and rain. All of these mentioned in 5, maybe 6. Were not part of God's original plan for human beings, and the first two of these, at least in the form in which we know them, were absent from the primeval world. Three of these came in consequences of the sin of Adam and Eve. Rain came later. B, the shrub of the field and the plant of the field of 2:5 correspond not to the vegetation created on day 3, but respectively to A, the thorns and thistles, xerophytes, desert plants that depend on rain for the germination of their seeds and were promised to Adam as part of the divine judgment. And B, the plants of the field of 3:18. That is, grain-bearing plants, such as wheat and barley that require cultivation. See, the work of Adam and Eve before their sin was to tend the orchard or Garden of Eden, not to till the soil. D, there was no rain in the primeval world because the conditions which produce it were absent. The world was watered by a mist. The Hebrew for mist is of uncertain meaning. The vegetation created on day three did not die for lack of water. This interpretation, which appears to me to be correct, presents no problem for literalists and nullifies the idea that it 2:5 contradicts 1:11 and 12, and that the days were not literal days. Now I'm going to go to another area here. Let us assume that everything I have said before is wrong. Let us assume that the days were not literal days. Can we then, assuming that this assumption is correct, get long ages out of them? And this is what I'm going into now. The day-age theory, the belief that the days of creation week were in reality long ages, must be discussed. If all arguments for literal days were to fall, would it be mandatory or even justifiable to accept the day-age theory? The answer to this question is an emphatic no. According to Dillman, the reasons advanced for construing these days as long periods of time are inadequate. This theory faces problems exegetical, logical, and scientific. As Davis noted, there are serious hermeneutical difficulties in the day-age theory. Okay, number one, Yom is never used in the Old Testament of a period of time long enough for harmonizing scripture and science. Skinner and Stambaugh emphatically reputed the interpretation of Yom as eon. The former said that this interpretation is opposed to the plain sense of the passage and has no warrant in Hebrew usage, not even in Psalm 94. According to Stambaugh, even in the plural, cannot be used of periods of time longer than a few thousand years. Two, the day-age theory requires extrapolations that defy the laws of logic. Obviously, even if the days of Genesis 1 were not literal days, it would involve huge extrapolations to interpret them as periods of time long enough to satisfy the demands of geology and biology. Even if the seventh day extends across thousands of years of history, as some maintain, it would not follow that, as some non-literalists believe, quote, the 6 days can cover millions of years of cosmogony, unquote. That some day-age theorists are ready to admit to such extrapolation is obvious from the following statement. Hans-Georg Brauumer, after discussing the idea that the days were literal days, said it would, quote, do no harm to the creation story to understand creation in rhythms of millions of years. Three, alternate expressions. According to Skinner, that's John Skinner, wrote one of the volumes of the International Critical Commentary. I don't believe he would be classified as evangelical. According to Skinner, if the author of Genesis had had eons in mind, he would hardly have missed the opportunity of stating how many millenniums each embraced. Why would Moses risk obfuscating the issue by using days if he believed that the days were long ages? Four, the difficulty of relating the fourth commandment of the Decalogue to the day idea of creation if the days were long periods of time. Five, the difficulty of understanding these days as long ages if each day consisted of a period each of light and darkness, as the account of Genesis says the days did. Marsh pointed out, that Frank Marsh and his son-in-law is with us, it is impossible to recognize the fact that each period of creation week was divided into a light portion and a dark portion, with the idea that each period was millions of years in length. As Quine noted, day-age theorists must imagine that during the creation era, plants and trees flourished on the face of an earth spinning alone through a sunless, moonless, starless void. Seven, the interdependence of plants and animals. According to Marsh, since plants and animals are interdependent, as in the case of pollination of plants by bees, animals could not have been created much later than plants were.
This argument is even more convincing with respect to the interdependence of plants and animals in relation to the atmospheric carbon dioxide and oxygen that, respectively, they require. 8. The age of Adam. As Dillman noted, the determination of the length of Adam's day in chapter 5 is in contradiction with the idea that days 6 and 7 were long periods. Now, that takes care of that department. I'm going to discuss two other views which some scholars have advanced, and which I believe, perhaps wrongly, have not gained wide acceptance. Some scholars have proposed cutting the Gordian knot of disagreement on Genesis 1 by maintaining that the days were literal days, but that the periods of creative work were ages. Others have held that the creation account has no chronological meaning. I'm going to consider two of these views in some detail and the third view just in general terms. None of these explanations appears to have gained wide acceptance. 1. The fiat day theory. This is the idea, advanced by Hayward and traced by him back to F.H. Capron, that Genesis 1 is basically an account of the creative fiats which were uttered on 6 literal days. Inserted into this primary narrative is a series of parentheses which describe the implementation of the fiats and which, of course, could have taken any amount of time to occur. The fiats of God are uttered swiftly, but his mills grind slowly. Hayward claims as the basis for this theory a Hebrew fondness for parenthetical expressions, and 2, that the passages in Genesis 1 that relate the implementation of these fiats are such expressions. In his own version of 1:1-2:3, he included parentheses to illustrate his theory. What do we say to this theory? It is far from obvious to the writer that even, given a Hebrew fondness for parenthetical expressions, which is very debatable, statements in Genesis 1 were such expressions. And as noted, God takes as long a time or as short a time in doing anything as his purpose requires. That disposes of that theory. 2, the days of revelation theory, which is perhaps better known than the preceding. The theory that the 6 days were not days of creation, but when God revealed to human beings one day at a time his work of creation goes back to the 17th century. I believe to Hugh Miller. Is that correct? Okay. According to Wiseman, a leading proponent of this theory, much of creation had been accomplished in the long ages past, but, quote, there is no suggestion that the acts or processes of God had occupied those 6 days. You're surprised at that statement? I am too. Wiseman builds much of his case on the use of the Hebrew verb asah in Exodus 20:9-11, where in the King James Version it is translated do in verses 9 and 10, made in verse 11. Asah is an extremely common Hebrew word, generally with the idea of do or make, but of course with variations on those themes. In roughly 2/3 of its occurrence, asah is translated do or make in the King James Version. Wiseman, maintaining that since it is occasionally translated show in the King James Version, it can be so translated in Exodus 20:11. His idea is that in 6 days God showed or revealed to human beings the creation of heaven and earth. He maintained that in verse 11, asah necessarily means no such thing as created or made. According to Hassel, asah in its 2,600 plus occurrences in the Old Testament never means to show, and there's no Hebrew English dictionary which supports show as a translation of asah. The word is indeed translated show, S-H-E-W, the old form, 43 times in the King James, but never reveal. In most of these occurrences, 43 occurrences, it refers to the manifestation of a positive emotional quality such as kindness, love, and mercy. In none does it refer to the revelation of truth or the communication of knowledge. Regarding the use of asah in Exodus 20:11, I conclude, 1, that neither its semantic range nor the context permits translating it as showed or revealed. 2, that despite Wiseman's assertion that nowhere in the Bible does it say that God created the earth in 6 days, Asa can and should. Here, that is Genesis 20:11, be translated made or created. Exodus 28:11 cannot be used to support the days of revelation theory. Some of the other arguments I'm not going to discuss. They're equally weak. For this reason, among others, I consider this theory, the days of revelation theory, invalid. Harold Clark characterized the days of revelation theory as about the weakest argument that can be brought against the creation story. I would reserve this honor for the fiat days theory discussed above. I'm almost through, so cheer up. Three, non-chronological views. Some non-literalists have advanced the idea that the author of Genesis 1 was dedicated to a high-level purpose concern, for example, with formulating a theology of the Sabbath, and was therefore not interested in details of chronology. In fact, Clauser considers it improper to question whether the 6 days were literal 24-hour days or geological eras. Surprisingly, he states that, quote, the text shows not the slightest hint of any concern, unquote, with either the processes used by God or the time involved. In other words, the question of literal or non-literal days is not an issue. I deal with this concept in general terms only. The purposes of Moses in writing Genesis 1 were surely high-level purposes and may have included or probably included, one, to provide a theology, A, of creation, B, of the Sabbath, C, of humanity, and two, to provide a polemic against idolatry and mythological cosmogonies. Did you say cosmogony or cosmogony? I'm not sure. Relating details would be necessary for the realization of these purposes, that each creative work was accomplished without effort. It surely can be considered a component of a theology of creation and a polemic against pagan cosmogonies. That creation was distributed over 6 literal days with a desistance from work on the 7th is obviously a component of a theology of Sabbath. Further, according to Casuto, the writer of Genesis 1 was very careful to use certain key words appropriate numbers of times, whether 7 or a multiple of 7. It can hardly be said, then, that he had no interest in details.
This special presentation has been brought to you by American Cassette Ministries. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International Copyright 2000, American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. For additional cassettes by this speaker or for a free catalog of other American Cassette Ministry cassettes, please contact us as follows. To order toll-free in the United States and Canada, dial 1-800-233-4450. For international calls, dial 717-652-7000. For fax orders, dial 1-717-652-9050. Our internet email address is info@americancassette.org. Our entire current catalog, plus many other items, are available online from our secure website, www.americancassette.org. We accept MasterCard, Visa, and Discover cards. Or you may simply write to American Cassette Ministries, Post Office Box 922, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17108, in the United States of America. Answering the heart cry of the faithful for 25 years, American Cassette Ministries requests your continued prayer and financial support as we strive to provide you with the finest, most powerful spiritual messages available. Our one purpose in ministry, to prepare you and your loved ones to meet Jesus Christ. Peace and peace.